Okay, hello and welcome to our Destiny Unveiled Advent Holy Nights Visioning Conversation. Thank you all for being here on this first Advent Sunday as we begin our journey through the 4 weeks of Advent, the Holy Nights of Christmas, and across the threshold to the new year. I'm Viviana Sinclair, and I'm here with my partner, Elia Rael, who is largely responsible for the offering of this conversation. Welcome, Elia.
Thank you, Viviana, and welcome to all of you that took the time to register and be on the line today. I think we can look forward to a good call, and with the participants we have, hopefully we can have some intimate question and answers at the end.
Yeah, from my limited knowledge of those of you who have joined us today, we have a broad spectrum of participants that range from those who are longtime students of Rudolf Steiner's work and who are actively engaged in practical fields of endeavor inspired by anthroposophy. And then there are those of you who are newly interested and only beginning to explore what Rudolf Steiner has made available to us and are curious to learn more. So Elia and I will do our best to meet everyone's needs and interest levels in this conversation as best we can. Elia and I are going to offer some leading thoughts, and then we'll open the lines for comments, insights, and questions. So if you have thoughts or questions to share as we go along, please just, you know, make a note of them, and then press star 6 on your telephone keypad, which will put you in the queue so your line can be opened and we can hear from you and you can share with everyone else too. So we're going to cover as much as we can in this call today, and then we'll pick up again on our free Monday evening community conversation called The Soul, the Season, and the Spirit of Our Time, which will begin on Monday, December 14th, and occur every Monday ongoingly throughout the cycle of the year. So a lot of the themes that we develop today can be, you know, further developed in conversation for those who would like to participate and have some place to go to really support one another through this process in the cycle of the year. So, Elia, I'd love to hear from you. Would you be willing to share why you were inspired to offer this call today and what you hope to awaken in those who have joined us?
Well, thank you, Viviana. I've lived for a long time with this particular season of the year, which is Advent to Christmas. In fact, when we lived in Fair Oaks, California, we actually produced 4 years in a row a Christmas and Holy Nights journal. And I've always been intrigued by the doings or the historical Christmas conference that took place back in 1923. In fact, I was actually asking lots of questions about something that I felt occurred back in the past that I could never get anybody to give an answer. I mean, I asked Hans Gebert, I asked Bernard Glass, certain things. And it was really only later, much, much later, that books then were starting to be written that talked about, in a certain sense, the history of the society. But I really wanted to go deeper into what I was experiencing about the inner content of the Christmas conference itself, found in those lecture cycles on world history in the light of anthroposophy. So that was really kind of the stimulus to really go forward with this call. We've actually wanted for a few years to actually unconceal what we want to call the new Christmas conference paradigm. So what I'm hoping that the listeners could get out of this is a stimulation to what I would want to call doing the Christmas conference anew, or doing the Christmas conference now, which means as an individual from what we would share today, you may find your way into what we share on your own, and or share it in a group, because I think that we might have missed something historically in thinking of it like something back there in 1923 as something alive and within us right now in 2015.
Yeah, and just, I mean, to add a thought about it, you know, for those who are new to anthroposophy, what he's talking about when he says the society, he's talking about the Anthroposophical Society and the difference between, which is really Rudolf Steiner founded to have a social body where we could find our way to one another and do our work together. And Elia, maybe you could share a little bit. You know, there's so much pain and suffering in the world right now and so much chaos, and we know that Rudolf Steiner underwent his own trials and his own pain and suffering, and maybe you could share a little bit about what was going on in his life in the year 1923, before he refounded the society and before he brought this new impulse, which you're alluding to, which has sort of been, it was sort of, I think, misunderstood and not really taken up. I've watched you searching for the root of the problems, and am really interested to hear, you know, how that developed in Rudolf Steiner, how you see that developing in his initiative.
Well, if we go back to the year 23, which is really for all of us like 92 years ago, on December 31st, 1922, an arson started a fire within the Goetheanum. And during the day, he had been giving lectures to the theologians who were attempting to, out of a question, to renew the spiritual life. And so here's the flame, or let's say the starting of the burning, and the flames really didn't break through all the way into the roof until the evening. And then, of course, the attempt was made to put out the fire, but it really wasn't possible. And it was probably, you know, around midnight, 1 o'clock in the evening that the flames broke through the double cupolas and basically imploded the domes. And then a very interesting experience occurred between Ida Wegman, who was the medical doctor, and Rudolf Steiner, where she had asked him, is it possible to refound the mysteries? So Rudolf Steiner lived with that question all of 1923, and he really felt that this outer picture of the burnt Goetheanum was also an inner reality as a crisis within the society itself and all the lodges and branches or communities that he visited all throughout Europe. And so living with that question, also behind that was he himself was in a lot of turmoil about should he really stay with the inspirations that he would call the anthroposophical movement, meaning things that were coming to him from the spiritual world. And he really took up a resolve near the end, because the question, or I would say the answer, really started to formulate itself. And then late in November, he gave a lecture cycle called Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers. And he had already sent out a communique, an invitation for members from all over the world to come to Dornach to attend what he had called the Christmas Foundation meeting. So what many may not realize is that Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Center was one part of a triptych of three lecture cycles. In the middle were the lecture cycles given in the evening of the Christmas conference, and the last of them was into 1924, which was Rosicrucianism and Modern Initiation. So at one point, I was able to kind of think it through and realize, wow, these really complete a whole. And that's really, you know, that's really the direction we really want to take in the call and deepen our understanding of that as much as possible. So, Viviana, is there anything you wanted to share or add further to what I had just suggested? Are you there?
Sorry, I muted my line. Sorry. Before
we need your voice.
I know. I'm sorry. So listen, your line is a little muffled, and I think you should hop on my line so it sounds a little better, because
all right.
You're not coming through real clear. So
okay.
Yeah, I think it'll be better. Okay, so, I'd just like to say that, you know, okay, so how does this relate to us today? How does this, what difference does this, these lecture cycles make for us in our consciousness, in our awareness, and how does it relate to Advent and this path before us right now? And I just like to point out that in Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers, Rudolf Steiner gave us a new perspective to perceive the mineral, the plant, the animal, and human kingdoms. And we can think of these four Advent Sundays as an acknowledgement of the different kingdoms of nature and our relationship to them. And he reminds us in these lectures that our consciousness has not always been so materially oriented. And there's a reason why we came to this material consciousness for freedom's sake and to be emancipated, so to speak, from the spiritual world, in a sense, so that we could come to know our own spiritual essence and being. And so, but now it's time again to reconnect spiritually through our own eye being, through our own inner perception and perspective. So in these lectures in the Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers, even though he doesn't talk about Advent, he gave out lectures that prepare us to come to a new conscious relationship to structure and form as evidence in the mineral kingdom, to the life processes as evidence in our relationship to the plant kingdom, to our relationship with one another and our destiny tasks that we find in the human realm. And so we can see this progression that he talks about and that can help us awaken. And he, all the while, he is paving a path through Advent, through this time. He starts around November 23rd and gives these lectures all the way through Advent, and he's really setting the stage for what he's about to do, as Elias said, with the Christmas conference and initiating something new, not just for anthroposophists, but for all of humanity, a new way to come to a conscious relationship, very universal in nature. And so this week, this first week of Advent, we have an opportunity, and we have cosmic forces that are actually working with us now at a much stronger and closer relationship than we have at other times of the year. There's help available to us now that isn't always accessible in the same way as it is now. So we have this opportunity right now, especially this week, to come to a new relationship to our physical form, to our bodies, our home, our structure that houses, our office, And even our business vessel or how we structure our day, if we think about it sort of as the Saturn mysteries, as giving structure and form so that we can find freedom through form. And, it, you know, Rudolf Steiner, he brought this new kind of thinking, a heart consciousness thinking. And one of the most fruitful things that I've really gained as an activity is to bring a heart consciousness from studying the heart cognition possibilities with the lectures on the etheric heart, to really just bringing my attention into my heart as much as I can in relationship to listening to my intuition around the structures and how I set up my day and how I take care of my body and what's being asked of me. And I think I just experience over and over the beauty of this time of year and the purity that can be there, the closeness of the spiritual world. So it was, even though these lectures were given so many years ago, they're still so relevant and fresh. So next week, just to give you a broad stroke, it's more about the becoming more conscious of the life processes and raising our habits into a more heartfelt awareness. And then the third week, our emotions, our relationships, our soul can be purified and tended and be expressed with more authenticity, just as an exercise to prepare for the birth of what's coming towards us here. And then in the fourth week, just before Christmas, by way of all that we have done, we come to a new possibility to discern our destiny initiative that we're carrying on behalf of humanity and begin to perceive a vision, a clear vision, now that we've looked at form and process and soul qualities and characters, like what is it that we really, what are we preparing for? What are we wanting to birth and to bring forth into the new year and that we can share with one another during the Holy Nights, which the Holy Nights are the 12 days and the 13 nights from Christmas Eve to Epiphany on January 6th. So maybe, Eli, you would like to, if you have anything to add to that or offer some reflection.
Well, that was really a wonderful sharing. And I'm sitting here at my desk, and I'm actually reading, looking at the table of contents of the lectures within Mystery Knowledge of Mystery Centers. And it's interesting that what he's doing is he's starting here with this cycle, but within it he goes deep into the mysteries of Ephesus and then the mysteries of Hibernia, which he said were the most difficult of all to penetrate, and then the Eleusinian mysteries, and then he goes in a lecture on Samothrace, and then here's the wonderful pivotal lecture, the transition from the spirit of the ancient mysteries to the medieval mysteries. So imagine you're one of the participants, and of course you could have been there if you were granted two incarnations within the last 100 years. You could have been there, and you had gone there, and he mentions in that there are many in the listening audience who have come for the Christmas conference gathering. So often when he spoke, it was about what was living within individuals within the audience. So there's this great preparation that's going on with what he's given here. So he adds to it later in the lecture cycles on world history in the light of anthroposophy. So it links on to what's already there given in Mystery Knowledge and Mystery Centers. So thank you, Viviana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so traditionally, like, what are we preparing for? What is this Advent? What is the season of Advent all about? So traditionally, we celebrate Christmas as the birth of the child Jesus. And in Rudolph, who comes to bear the Christ within himself, and in Rudolf Steiner's Calendar of the Soul, which describes the human soul as a Madonna through the cycle of the year, every year at Christmas, according to Steiner's spiritual research, each one of us has the possibility to give birth to our spirit child, which is that unsullied, untainted part of ourselves that is able to remember and connect to its divine origin. So there's a birthing going on in remembrance of this pure soul who came into incarnation for the first time, and then our own soul with that we share, because we were there in the beginning with this brother soul of Jesus, and then his incarnation made it possible for all of us to have this spirit, the birthing of a spirit child at this time. And Steiner talks about how it's related to initiation knowledge, the timing of it, and why it appears at this time. And so Advent is this time of contraction and preparation to prepare us not only for the celebration there, but also to prepare ourselves so that we can also grow to become a Christ bearer in our own being. And in my experience, just in working with Advent in the Holy Nights and the time after, it seems that whatever we don't tend to, or whatever I don't tend to through these weeks of Advent, while we have a more spiritual support to do so, will rise again in our biographies to meet us in some way as challenges after the Holy Nights of Christmas. So I just really encourage everybody to take time, you know, during this time to set your vision, set your intentions for the day when you get up in the morning, and ask for help during the evening, and practice as much as you can of just listening inwardly to what's being asked of you. And I really believe that we can get help during this time. So, yeah, so Eli, I'm wondering if you would just share the Christmas verse that Rudolf Steiner gave so that we can give people an imagination of the birth of the spirit child.
Sure, yeah. The his Christmas verse comes out of the original calendar of the soul, or soul calendar, and we did an adaptation on that called Divine Dialogue, which is a book that we had gotten published. So here's the verse. I feel the spirit child set free from spell in womb of soul. The holy word of worlds has in the heart's clear light begotten heaven's own fruit of hope, which joyfully grows towards farthest worlds out of my being's godly ground.
Thank you. So how, if we look beyond Advent, we see this path before us of Advent, and then we come to the birthing of this spirit child. Where does Rudolf Steiner take us then after that? So we kind of get a vision of where we're going, and how can we take our lead from him?
Well, I think this deals with the hidden part, so to speak, of the open secret that Rudolf Steiner gave to us with the Christmas Conference Foundation meeting. Because if we just inwardly listen to that verse, that there's this possibility of a spirit child being born, But the truth is that if we think of what we get behind what he did in the Christmas conference itself, which was the attempt at refounding or the refounding of the society, so that during the day, all these principles were set forth. There was open dialogues about what a free and open society would look like. But in the evening now, he's starting with the lectures on world history in the light of anthroposophy. And he's recapitulating this incredible journey from Atlantis through ancient India and the ancient Persian cultural epic. Now, each one of these epics is 2,160 years long, so they're large cycles of time. But he's talking in those evenings about the consciousness that we possess as human beings. Then, in the second or third lecture, he starts dealing with the story or the legend of Gilgamesh and Eabani. And if you study history a bit, you'll find that that is the oldest recorded document we possess. And what we can share openly now, which may not have been understood then, was Rudolf Steiner himself was taking a gigantic karmic step where he on his own decided to share his own karma, his own personal karma within the Christmas conference, not knowing how the spiritual world would receive what he had to say. And so when he recounts the story of Gilgamesh and Eabani, what he's sharing with us is that this is an incarnation, probably his very first incarnation, as the individuality Eabani. Because Eabani could still hear the language of the animals. And he had journeyed long in the spiritual spheres before descending to the earth. While Gilgamesh had many, many incarnations behind him. And if one can read through the lines, he's really speaking to one of his closest collaborators in the audience, Ida Wegman. So as Gilgamesh, he journeys to the Bergen land, and there he ingests planetary metals to stay up for 7 days and seven nights. And then you bring that whole imagination forward to the present, and here is Rudolf Steiner introducing homeopathic doses of planetary metals that is the core of anthroposophical medicine today. And throughout the whole evenings, he's weaving this golden thread through time, from the time of Gilgamesh to the time of Ephesus with Cratylus and Mysia, and then Aristotle and Alexander. And the reason he does this, because of the courage of his individuality, plus in what he considered to be the refounding of the mysteries, he took it upon himself as a karmic task to reveal his own karmic connection with every incarnation he had with Ida Wegman.
Great. Yeah, I find it fascinating that he is doing this in the evening and that she was actually the one that came to him when Rudolf Steiner was watching the ruins of the Gertianum at the burning a year previous to this. She came to him that night and dedicated herself to him from that point on, and really was the one that asked the question, how can the mysteries be refounded? And he saw in the flames, behind the burning of the Gertianum, the burning of the Temple of Ephesus, which, correct me if I'm wrong, Elia, but which was burnt to, or the Temple of Diana, is that right, in Ephesus, that was burnt to the ground the day Alexander the Great was born. So here are these two tragedies, and he and Ida Wegman are there together witnessing this, and he sees this backdrop spiritually in the backdrop. And so now, at coming back around and coming back to the whole form of the society, I'd like to stay with that for a minute, because He plants a new foundation stone into the hearts of the members there, and it's instead of planting it into the ground like he did for the first Gertianum, which was the home of the original Anthroposophical Society, he now plants a verse into the hearts of members. And Eli, maybe you could say a little bit about that and why the significance of that and what that can do for each of us as a tool to become more self-conscious.
Yeah, he unveiled the first part of the Foundation Stone Meditation. I'm pretty sure it was like on a Tuesday, which is a Mars day. And so as he moved through the week, during the day, they were working the principles, but he also gave them the additional parts to the totality of the Foundation Stone Meditation. And in the original recording of some of the people that heard it, heard Rudolf Steiner speak the verses, he actually called on all nine hierarchies, angels, archangels, archai, dynamis, curiatites, exousiae, thrones, cherubim, and seraphim. It was a call really out of the spiritual world that really said, oh, human soul, this is where you live. And he shared in the Foundation Stone Meditation itself the three different parts of the human being where the spiritual world lives. And this was also a mirror of what he asked for out in social life, the threefolding of social life. And it was the great tragedy of that time period in World War I, where threefolding was not taken up. But what Rudolf Steiner wanted to do and intended with the refounding of the society was to threefold it. So there would be an economic component, a rights life, and a free cultural life, which would have existed in the founding of the general Anthroposophical Society and its principles.
Well, I think it could also be seen like the Gertianum Association, which was responsible for the grounds and the economic wherewithal of the buildings, the maintenance, that kind of thing that Rudolf Steiner was a member of before he joined the society, actually. He was a member of the Gertianum Association. I don't believe that he really intended to dismantle that, which was done later, but that was really to hold the physical aspect. And then there was the Anthroposophical Society, which was to nurture the life of the soul. And then the School of Spiritual Science, which was held by both the Gertianum Association and the Society as the free spiritual research that really was to enliven every area of practical activity in human life so that he really had this wish and intention that when people had a problem, they would look to the Gertianum because here were people actively researching spiritually how to meet the problems, how to meet the challenges, how to meet the educational challenges, how to meet the medical challenges, how to meet the pollution. I mean, whatever it is that you are involved with, that people took up this new way of looking and perceiving that he is bringing forward in all of his work with Anthroposophy. But what's interesting, what I find in the Foundation Stone Meditation, is he begins with the will. O human soul, you live in the will, which bears thee through the realm of space. And so it's really the whole principles of initiation, instead of going from thinking to feeling to willing, he's now reversing it. He's now changing the direction, and he's saying, can we work out of our intuitive will? Can we work out of our initiatives with one another? Can that provide the basis for a new culture of initiation that is open to all of humanity who is ready to take the next steps? And can we work together to meet the crisis that is out there, because we can't look to government leaders. We can't look to, you know, the political leadership that's out there. And so he took the initiative on himself that way. And thank you for bringing that forward, Elias. So, and that he reveals his own karma. I think if you look at who Ida Wegman was as Alexander the Great, here was somebody who had an indomitable will and had an incredible capacity for leadership. And it's really interesting to see how, you know, she really wasn't accepted by some of the core people in the society. And Eli and I really believe that it's partially what led to Rudolf Steiner's death, and that and eventually it led to the breaking of the Vorstand. So I think it's good for us to be aware of these things and bear them inside of us, and to ask the question, like, how can we be responsible today for acknowledging that, and what can be done continuously to change our relationship with the society, that those people that were asked to leave the society after Rudolf Steiner died, Ida Wegman being one of them, would feel welcome to come back and to rejoin. And we need their leadership. We need all the young souls were really pretty much asked to leave. And the initiatives, a lot of them got stymied or stopped. I mean, it's interesting, and this is what Elias has been searching for ever since I met him when he was just in his 20s. And you know, like, he knew something had happened karmically with the society. And so this is, he's unearthed this picture that there's a sort of tragedy with it. And yet, if we can raise it to consciousness and through the pain of acknowledging it, you know, reunite ourselves with Rudolf Steiner's intention, because the intention and the deed that he did was real, and that he may be waiting for us to wake up and to recognize what happened, so that he can even come back. So with that, I'd just like to say that for us now in the present, it's important that we're awake to the choices that we make over those 12 days and nights from Christmas Eve to Epiphany on January 6th, because during this time, according to Steiner, there are creative seeds that are laid in our souls as a living signature of the upcoming year. You know, we might not always be able to determine what happens during those 12 days and nights, but we can be attentive to our thoughts, our words, our deeds, what we're creating, what we're focusing on, how we respond to events during that time, what arises as karmic encounters during this time. And with those things can provide the seeds of potential for the year ahead. And I always like to keep a journal and just take notes in the morning and before I go to sleep, and note any karmic moments of intensity or what's coming up, what's alive in me, and what needs attention in my life during that time. And right in the center of the Holy Nights is the Hidden 13th Night, which falls on New Year's Eve. And Steiner is quoted to have said to Herbert Hahn that on this night, the folk spirit of the people pulls back, and what we think and envision for the year ahead can be perceived by the higher hierarchies, who will help us towards the realization of its accomplishment. So he encouraged us to share our visions, share our initiatives with one another. If nothing else, if you're you know, isolated in an isolated community, then, you know, write it down and create an imagination and offer it up on New Year's Eve. And doing it in a community, we can hold each other's as possibility for what each of us wish to bring forth on behalf of humanity for the year ahead. And Elia, maybe you could share a little bit about the Rudolf Steiner and the lecture that he gave on New Year's Eve, which was all about the right entry into the spiritual world.
Yeah, of course. He's dealing there. I mean, the lecture itself is very potent. What I always come away with from it is that when we cross the threshold, we meet the guardian of the threshold. And oftentimes, if we are not exposed to anthroposophical thoughts, then what we carry with us is our abstract thinking. And if you cross the threshold with your abstract thinking, the spiritual world can't be with that. It's like dead thoughts. And so you're thrust back out of the threshold. You're not allowed to pass the guardian. And so you could come back with your thinking, feeling, and willing being like the three-headed dog, all going in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
But what he's really attempting, and if I could give you an imagination here, and again, let's go back, all of us on the call, and think of ourselves being there each evening, and that what's occurring is we're hearing these lectures, you know, each evening, and they're building up within us, and that each night when we cross the threshold, we lay our body down, we come out of our body, we're in our dream body, and there's where we want to be able to live in our spirit self. And so these lectures that he's giving are nurturing this identity of the spirit self. And then imagine that there's Rudolf Steiner now as our guide. And so each evening we enter into, let's say, the realm of Pisces. He leads us out to the cosmic periphery. And so what we are doing, and this is what I want to really share with you as what I believe to be the Christmas conference paradigm, or the new Christmas conference paradigm, is that we are moving up a ladder into the spiritual world. And the last place we experience is we enter into the realm of Sophia. And we know that he shared with us that within the Christmas conference itself, that Anthroposophia was birthed out of us as humanity, that she walks about us as a real human being. And I think that's still the hidden mystery of what I want to call the Christmas conference paradigm, but it needs to be done, meaning that the individual, other individuals, groups, and branches could take it up as something that's fresh and new that they can do, that they literally can do, and contemplate each evening that you are entering the spiritual world and that someone is guiding you. It could be Michael. After all, Michael serves this high being. And so we cross through the 31st, which really is the hidden holy night. There are 6 days before and there are 6 days after. And in the original soul calendar, Rudolf Steiner called this day the Christus Fest, the Christ Festival Day. And it's still hidden. It's still very much hidden, and it's really not practiced. And I would encourage anybody listening to go deeper with what I've shared and live with the idea of what that might look like. Because I don't know what it looks like, but I'd sure like to know from other people what it might look like. So what I'm saying is there are these hidden depths within that central lecture cycle that haven't been plumbed.
Well, I also imagine that, and we're going to open the lines in just a few minutes, but I just want to say that I imagine that if we were to share our initiatives with one another, like we've talked about, or what like we've imagined, and we've come to the initiative that we are intuiting that is best for us to carry for the year ahead. What form does it need? What processes need to be put in place? Who are our destiny companions, our working partners, and how does the initiative serve humanity and the earth? Like, what is the role there? And we oftentimes close our economic bookkeeping activity on New Year's Eve. We start, we close, we take a snapshot from the year, we see where we're at. And what Rudolf Steiner did in the Christmas conference is he addressed the economic aspect and how much money was needed, and he talked about dues and such like that and what could happen with an influx of capital as far as research went. So he was really putting it out there, you know, economically, but then also he gave this foundation stone meditation to lead us, as Elias getting to the realm of Sophia, so that we walk with her through with Anthropos Sophia to the Christ Festival Day, through this day on the first. And I just imagine, like, if we could threefold our activity with one another, where we're following our spiritual guidance, we're opening socially to one another, and begin to share economically in a collaborative spirit with those that we feel called to participate in that way, you know, how can it could begin to make a big difference. So and I think the template is right there in the Christmas conference, and we've read other books by The Right on Corporation by Christopher Houghton Budd, who talks about entrepreneurship as a path of initiation and the formation of this a corporate structure that really serves these threefold principles in a way that's very healthy and harmonious and sustainable. And so I just imagine us to be able to coax this out, to make it really concrete, to make it practical, and to also not lose touch with the spirit, that it comes out of spiritual inspiration. So, so the Christmas conference itself closes on New Year's Day, and at that point, we've really gotten everything that we need to, we've gained all that we need to carry us into the new year. But the holy nights continue on until January 6th, or Epiphany, which is traditionally celebrated as the day of the baptism of Jesus by John, when the descent of the Spirit, whom we call Christ, united with the bodily sheaths of Jesus. And that was another deed that would impact all of humanity and have its impact whether we're conscious of it or not. So I think we would love to hear from you, to hear your thoughts, to see what comes alive from you. You know, you're listening today. If you have comments to share or any kind of reflections or how it may have touched you in some way, and to open the your line, just press *6 on your telephone keypad, and then that will put you into the queue. And I'll open your line. We'd love to see if this was helpful, if it was, how it landed with you. Do you find some inspiration here, or is this new to you? Is it something that you've thought about and searched for? All those kinds of things. So go ahead and press *6, and we'll open the lines for conversation. We have no questions, no comments. We have several people on the line, but I'm is everybody being shy? Oh, yay. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I'm going to unmute your mic here. Okay, your line should be open.
Okay, I just had a question about, Alaya, you mentioned Sophia or Anthroposophia actually incarnating as a human being. And I've never heard that before or thought about that. I'm just wondering if you might say a little bit more about that or what makes you come to that conclusion.
Well, it's something that was directly said by Rudolf Steiner various times, and more at the end, you know, of his lecturing period, 1921-22, in those period time periods. But he had also mentioned that name earlier, maybe 8 or 9 years earlier. And I was really myself quite surprised when he said that she is a human being walking amongst us. In fact, he said, there shouldn't be hardly anything that we do that we don't ask her advice upon. And later, there's other lectures where he says that she had a life cycle that is totally different than ours, so that she went through these different 700-year time periods. And that through the Christmas conference, she was birthed out as a living human being amongst us. Not like you could go there physically, I believe, and touch her, but that she is a spiritual human being.
Okay, that's a different picture for me, to have a spiritual being that relates to humanity, as opposed to a physical human being that would seem to be much more limited, actually.
Yeah. Well, if you take, too, what he says that occurred in April 3rd, 33 AD, that the Christ being was able to spiritualize all the material substance of the body of Jesus of Nazareth between Good Friday and Easter Sunday. And that's why Mary Magdalene, going to the grave, does not recognize the individuals that she perceives as the gardener until he speaks. And so in the lectures on From Jesus to Christ, 1910, he's really sharing with us that when we look at another human being, we do not see the true physical body. What we see is a spiritual body filled out with material substance. So what I believe he's saying is that Anthroposophia has the archetype of the original phantom or the physical body that was created back in the Saturn epoch or cycle, but it's not filled out with material substance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I raise butterflies and release them every year, and so I get to see the open secret of the caterpillar becoming chrysalis and then transforming the plant substance inside that chrysalis, and what emerges is a form that isn't even remotely close to what a caterpillar is.
Mm-hmm.
But it bears the form of an archangel. And he says in the lecture cycles on the human being as the symphony of the creative word that what's on the wings of the butterfly is the most spiritualized of earthly substance. So does that help at all?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Great question, Pam. Anything else you'd like to share?
No, thank you very much to both of you for sharing your thoughts and insights.
You're welcome.
You're welcome.
Anybody else have a question or comment or reflection of any kind? Okay, we're going to open the line for the next question. When your line is open, you should hear something in your ear that says your line has been opened.
Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hey, it's Phoebe. First, I'd like to thank you all so much. This is fascinating, just fascinating. Terrific. I'd like to chime in on the topic of the Sophia aspect. I have read some of the books of Steiner or about Steiner related to that topic. But I would like to ask, with it being Christmas and all of that, could you explain further or possibly direct your answer to the relationship of Sophia to the feminine aspect of what I consider the Christ, probably in the form of, as I call her, Mother Mary, or Mary Magdalene, or the Holy Women, or just the aspect of Sophia I'm interpreting to be of a feminine aspect, and in the sense of my question coming to you, so you'll know, from the standpoint of balance, of harmony with perhaps the masculine aspect, and not as an opposition, but as a expression of that sort of entity. So if you can sort of work through any of that I've proposed.
Well, Viviana, you want to share, and then I might want to add something.
Well, that's a great question. Was it Dee Dee?
BB.
Oh, BB?
BB. Okay. Like a BB gun.
Okay. All right, great question. What comes to me is there was this imagination of Sophia really descending with humanity into earthly life, and she has gone through a lot of suffering and gone through. I mean, she for me, and I'm just going to speak personally. I can't really relate this to Rudolf Steiner, but what I've worked through in myself and how I hold her is that she bears within herself the tableau of all of the soul being of humanity, that she carries that within herself. And it took the incarnation of Christ to bring forth a new possibility for humanity to be able to wake up in our I consciousness, to be able to wake up to what we're carrying in our soul, to be able to have the empathy to carry other people in their soul. And at the cross, there were three Marys. There were three Marys at the cross, and for me, that's a picture of the threefold soul of that each of us has in our thinking, our feeling, and our willing. And I've had the challenge and opportunity to cross the threshold with eyes wide open in an accident that I was in, and I got to experience this soul tableau that is talked about when you reach a certain stage of initiation, you begin to see in picture form. And I really feel that this possibility exists with, that's what Rudolf Steiner was able to do with his portraying his karmic pictures. He was able to do so from looking at this memory tableau, which sometimes is called the Akashic Record. Well, really, I feel that that is Anthropos Sophia's cloak, so to speak, and that she bears that within herself. And out of his speaking himself in relationship to that, having the courage to reveal himself to those who were present is what began to open the pathway to Anthropos Sophia to be a guide for all of us. And it's our relationship. If you look at that Christmas verse again, it's the, and in the whole calendar of the soul, there's a love affair that goes on between the human soul, the Sophia of our soul, our inner feminine nature, with the cosmic word, with the Christ word, that when the two are brought to consciousness through our own I being, through being able to re-ensoul our soul, that is when Anthropos Sophia can be accessed and acknowledged and looked to as a guide. I'm wondering if that makes sense, Bibi.
Very nice. Beautiful.
Eli, you have anything else you want to share?
Well, I've been living into your wonderful imagination and sharing. And at the same time, I was also inwardly visioning Mary in the Luke's Gospel, overshadowing the Mary of Matthew's Gospel, because she's now in the spiritual world. And alongside of her, or behind her, I picture the being, this human heavenly being, Anthropos Sophia herself, overshadowing the Mary Sophia soul. That's what we call her in esotericism, Mary Sophia. But above the two of them is the divine Sophia. And you couldn't say it better, dear, out of a spirit in a female body than I could. So I loved what you shared.
Thank you.
And that was a very good question, Bibi.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anything else, Bibi? Anything you'd like to respond to that?
Well, this is so vast and so timeless, and so thought-provoking and feeling-provoking. the whole thing that you both have brought forward to me is just fascinating, and I'm just thrilled, just absolutely thrilled. So I've said that before, but it's true. And to focus on these, I think, extremely important events, and to see how they span or can span from the time of the Christmas event in 23 to now, and then to pull in for us the critical aspect of that relationship and the critical aspect of what you two have awakened to and are proposing to us. I feel a debt of gratitude to you both, as well as Steiner. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for sharing.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for your great question.
I'd like to add something further to Bibi's question or inquiry. And if we go back again to, if we look at Rudolf Steiner and we look at Ida Begman, and you have this incredible 5,000-year time span where the two of them have always been on the earth together and in incarnation together. Rudolf Steiner's task is to spiritualize the intellect. Ida Begman's task is to spiritualize the will. And there's a third individuality that weaves amongst the two of them. And if we go back to the Gilgamesh legend, there's a temple priestess who is able to seduce Iabani. But we have to really imagine what that was like in 2900 BC. It's not like we think of it today. It's much more an awakening can occur when a man unites with a woman. He had never been with a woman. But this woman becomes Marie Steiner in the present incarnation. So she carries strongly the element of the word and the feminine. Although there were aspects to it, to her being, that were, we could say, rather hard. But I just wanted to present that picture to you because it's an archetype. Rudolf Steiner, Marie Steiner, Ida Begman, each one with the task to spiritualize an element within them and then have it work together. And the working together is from the Sophia forces, the forces of love, the love of wisdom. And have that love find its way out into the culture through these different practical aspects that Rudolf Steiner gave us. Agriculture, biodynamic agriculture, Waldorf education. And we could say that in doing so, an individual's destiny can become the destiny of the times. And if we can unite the movement, all these daughters together, we together can create a culture of initiation. That's our task, all of us, because we can't do it alone. So I just wanted to add that to what we've already shared.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Elia. So maybe it's time to close. Let's open it. If there's any more questions, comments, we'll take time for one more. If you have something you'd like to share or comment about, go ahead and press star 6. Otherwise, maybe we should just do a quick review, a recap, and close for the day. And like I said, we'll be starting our Monday night, The Soul, the Season, and the Spirit of Our Time, just a free sharing and conversation every Monday evening starting December 14th, and we'll send out a invitation for that if you'd like to join us for that. So in the meantime, that'll be, I guess, 2 weeks, a little more than 2 weeks from today. So in the meantime, these next 3.5 weeks of Advent are a time of contraction where the spiritual world is actually drawing closer to us, and our spirit being, our etheric body, those memories that we carry are more accessible to us now. So it's time, you know, to take care and prepare and purify our sheaths and our body, our habits, our emotions, our relationships, like to be more attentive to them so we can be more, you know, guided with a little more clarity on our destiny path. And we're reminded to stay conscious during the 12 days and 13 nights of Christmas, especially New Year's Eve, so that we offer an imagination, that we're fashioning an imagination and a vision for the year ahead that we're offering up, and then opening ourselves to this being, Anthroposophia, as a guide on our path, and to see, question, you know, what would a new Christ Festival day look like on New Year's Day? How would we celebrate that together in light of the Christmas conference and to work out of an inspiration on behalf of the earth and one another spiritually, socially, and economically? What would that look like? And so that will give us, you know, kind of a focus for the time ahead. And I want to thank all of you very much for coming and taking this time on this first Advent Sunday to be with us here. We really appreciate you coming and receiving, for without your reception, we'd have nobody to share to. So we appreciate that. And tomorrow I'll be sending out a recording so you can review it later if you want to, and along with that I'll send a copy of the Foundation Stone meditation as a gift that you can have to work with through the Holy Night. Some of you may already have it, but if you don't, it's a very powerful meditation that was really the heart of the work and heart of the movement, and I think in part that Steiner was able to articulate that threefold being of Anthroposophia in the lines of that meditation is a real gift to be able to work with now and during the Holy Night. So I'll share that gift with all of you. And Eli and I wish you spirit remembrance, spirit mindfulness in the ever-present moment, and spirit vision as you journey through Advent, the Holy Nights, and across the threshold to the new year. So I'm going to open everybody's line here for a minute, and we can say goodbye. So thank you, everyone, again for coming, for staying in there with us, and we hope you'll join us on Monday evenings.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. Just wondering if there's a place to go if we want to make any comments and carry on a conversation in the meantime.
Oh, yeah, great. I guess if you're not opposed to meeting on Facebook, we have an Anthroposophy Alive group on there, and we'd love to carry the conversation on there. That would be great. So please come join. If you're not a member already, just ask to be in, and we'll be happy to have you. It's a private group just because we wanted to kind of be the guardian at the gate of who enters the conversation there. But that's a great question. Who asked that?
Great. Oh, it's Patricia. Thank you so much.
Great. Good question. Hi. Are you on Facebook?
Yes, and I have signed on, subscribed, so I'll go there.
Okay, perfect. All
right.
Thank you. All right, great. Okay, well, good night, everyone.
Good night.
Bye.
All right,
good night,
everyone. Bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.